Over 150 years ago, the Unitarian minister Theodore Parker shocked Boston's religious community with his sermon entitled The Transient and Permanent in Christianity. Today, Reverend Karen Stoyanoff will speak about this theme as it applies to life in the present day. We are honored to have Karen speak to us on the permanent and transient in life. Reverend Karen Stoyanoff.
What a pleasure it is to be here with you. I consider us to be neighbors, and so it's very nice to spend some time with you this morning. I have to tell you, on my way over here this morning, I had one of those moments that kind of seemed to step out of the ordinary experience of time as I was driving up Beach Boulevard, because I started early so I could take a leisurely drive instead of the freeway. All of a sudden there was this enormous billboard on the side of the road, and it said, "Don't believe in God? You are not alone." And it wasn't one of ours. I could hardly wait to get over to the side of the road and pull out my iPad so I could Google it and see. And it's a group of atheist organizations that have a national presence, and they have an Orange County organization, and we all missed going to their conference on the 15th of May. But I thought it was so appropriate on a morning where I'm talking about the permanent and the transient, and how life changes for all of us and what that is like for us. Because who would have expected to find a billboard saying "don't believe in God" and then to find out it wasn't one of ours? And then add to that, I had this iPad thing with me in the car, so I didn't have to wait to check it out at all. It seemed to me a perfect setting for me to come here and share with you my thoughts for this morning. I met a traveler from an antique land who said, "Two vast and trunkless legs of stone stand in the desert. Near them on the sand, half sunk, a shattered visage lies, whose frown and wrinkled lip and sneer of cold command tell that its sculptor well those passions read which yet survive, stamped on these lifeless things. The hand that mocked them, and the heart that fed, and on the pedestal these words appear: My name is Ozymandias, King of Kings. Look upon my works, ye mighty, and despair." Nothing beside remains. Round the decay of that colossal wreck, boundless and bare, the lone and level sands stretch far away. I first read that poem in high school, and it was a chilling experience. If I were to believe its message, there seemed to be little point to the struggle, little reason to attempt to achieve, little lasting reward that is realistically held out to us. A pretty daunting message for a 16-year-old. And today I certainly know that things don't make the good life, that the mightiest can be brought down by the stock market, the assassin's bullet, the errant natural disaster. And empires do fall, only to be replaced by new empires, neither better nor worse, just different in their location and their personnel. That which we most counted on fails us. Those things we thought were immutable clearly aren't. And each time life hands us another lesson about this truth, we have to reform our most basic understandings. And as if that wasn't enough, science changes, new discoveries are made, old ones debunked. The medicine that was intended to extend our lives turns out to conceal a secret worm that eats away at another part of life. The theory that helped us to make sense of our world is supplanted by another, more complex, difficult, and usually disturbing, at least at first. And just when we think we have mastered the art of understanding, we find ourselves back to square one. That is, if we want to live our lives in the here and now. And as if even that wasn't enough, it also means that our beliefs and values must change. And this is a terrible sticking point for many of us. We don't want to give up those cherished beliefs from our childhood or the hard-won understandings of our adulthood. We don't want to change the way we look at other people or explain the things that happen in life. It is those beliefs that have helped us get through the day, no matter what, and we don't want to give them up, at least not easily. It's comfortable to know what we believe, even if that belief is fairly negative or doesn't offer a lot of hope. It's what works for us. But as science changes our understanding of the world, our religious beliefs and ethical beliefs, as well as our values, need to change too. That is, if we want to stay viable. We're good at that as Unitarian Universalists. A look at our history for the past 200 plus years attests to our willingness to stay current with the world as we moved from traditional Christian beliefs to various forms of non-traditional Christian beliefs, to adding non-Christian but theistic beliefs, and finally to including humanistic or non-theistic understandings of meaning. And along the way, we learn to value diversity, to recognize the good stuff in other religious traditions, and to welcome thought that is antithetical or at least different from our own. Perhaps the most important understanding that we have come to is that each of us has to figure it out for ourselves, because there are no definitive answers. And so that's where I see us standing at the moment. We discover new truths all the time, which leaves us needing to change how we think and how we live our lives. We long for a sense of certainty about something, but a president is assassinated, someone deliberately crashes planes into buildings full of people going about their daily lives, a child we know is kidnapped and murdered, a loved one is diagnosed with a devastating disease. The company we count on goes under, leaving us unemployed in spite of an exemplary work record. People we love and count on change or move away. Our own body betrays us as we age. And over, we hear about the malfeasance of those in public positions of trust. And as if all that's not enough, when we turn to our religion for solace, we are told there are no answers, only questions. Is it any wonder, having said all of that, that I want to spend some time thinking about the permanent and the transient in life? Theodore Parker, 19th century Unitarian minister, preached a sermon entitled The Transient and Permanent in Christianity, dealing with the disputes over Christian doctrine, which permeated the Boston society of his era. It was his way of dealing with his version of how we cope with both change and uncertainty in what we believe, and for his day, that was the right emphasis. It was Christianity that he was struggling with as he attempted to not only make sense of his world, but keep abreast of the best understandings of the day. Theodore Parker was one of the most progressive speakers of his day. Were he alive today, his sermon, which I believe would be much better than mine, would have a very different emphasis from the original. I believe that today, at least for Unitarian Universalists, the discussion of permanence and transience in the world is not encompassed in Christian theology, nor is it about any other traditional theology. That no longer fits with the prevailing discussion amongst us. Nor do I believe that anything I'm going to say next will be contrary to a continued commitment to one of the world's religions, be it Buddhist, Christian, Jewish, Baha'i, Islam, or non-theistic thought. Parker talked about what would remain in spite of the ravages of circumstance and time. That is what he considered permanent. So today, I want to step outside of any of those philosophies and look instead at how we deal with a world that seems mainly transient to see if there is anything of permanence with which we can ballast our approach to today, tomorrow, and all those days that follow for us. I started thinking seriously about this subject some time ago. This is one of those sermons that have been evolving in my mind for some time now. It was easy to identify the transient from the personal empires we foolishly believe we can build and keep to the general sense of well-being that we love when we have, but which is so delicate that it never stays with us for long. And when I am reminded of the September 11th tragedy, my mind turns again to the fragile web of protection that we would like to believe is much stronger than it actually is. We are vulnerable always. And not only the good life, but general safety is transient. I'm reminded that when I was doing my internship, my fellow Meadville classmate asked me to do the readings when she led her first worship service. As the time came for the service to begin that morning, I realized I had the woman minister's dilemma. What to do with my purse while I am up in front? I've gotten much better as time has gone on. I just keep it with me now. But at that time, we were standing in the church office, and I asked her, "Is it safe to leave my purse in here?" Her answer was profound in its simplicity. "It is, until it isn't." Since that time, I felt that that was a good mantra for issues of safety most of the time. We love to be able to arrange things so that we and our significant others are safe, but the truth is that a safe situation is only so until it isn't. There are no guarantees. Safety, too, is transient. What we think is safe today may turn out not to be so tomorrow. Remember, most of those people who died on September 11th were not in the planes. They were just going to work like they always did. So having pretty well depressed myself with all those transient elements in life, I asked myself the big question. What then is permanent? And I knew almost immediately that although what happens to us, what we might acquire through our interactions in the world and the best wisdom of the day are definitely transient, subject to change or recall, and only of fleeting value in the creation of well-being, our reactions and our attitudes are not. Or at least they don't have to be. That is what we can count on, can translate from situation to situation, can take with us to the next thing, the next time, the next challenge. How we respond and how we choose to think about life can be the permanent. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying we should only have one response or that we must stick to our current understandings come what may. Rather, that we have a flexibility in both action and thinking that is still bound by a commitment to some core values. Let me see if I can explain with some examples. We have to have something to believe in. Now, I've already said that part of our problem is that Unitarian Universalism isn't going to give us a nice, neat package of beliefs to hang on to. But we do support the idea of thinking that through for oneself. I think for me personally, what I continue to believe in is the basic goodness of others. Not everyone, of course. There will always be someone around who's willing to swindle you, who might speak maliciously of you, who might even deliberately harm you. But none of those things negates the basic goodness of people for me. I found that when something bad does happen, it's a good thing to be able to fall back on my basic belief in humanity. It helps take the sting out of the moment. It reminds me that I can turn to others for both sympathy and assistance, and perhaps best of all, I like how life seems in general when I adopt that attitude. In fact, recently, I discovered this attitude is a perfect antidote for one of my pet peeves. The pet peeve is about people who think they need to tell me to zip up my purse so someone won't steal my money. This is clearly the sermon about purses. So, almost without exception, those who give me this advice are complete strangers. It most often happens in the produce department of the grocery store or in Target. Usually, it is an elderly woman, but every so often it is an elderly man. It's almost never a person my age or younger. And I just hope that means if I hang in there, eventually I'll outlive all those well-meaning busybodies. Anyway, I recognized the other day, after once again being speechless, mostly in indignation, when someone presumed to tell me that I needed to zip up my purse so that I wouldn't be robbed, that all that really said is that I have a more positive view of human nature than she did. Right away, that calmed me down. I like going through life with a basic belief that most humans are good. It makes life more joyful for me. And the stunning truth is that in 40-plus years of adulthood, mostly spent with my purse unzipped, I've only been robbed once. Just maybe I'm actually right about human nature. I came across a lovely poem by Robert Weston about the importance of humanity in our lives, and I'd like to share it with you. There is a living web that runs through us to all the universe, linking us each with each and through all life on to the distant stars. Each knows a little corner of the world and lives as if this were his all. We no more see the farther reaches of the threads than we see of the future, yet they're there. Touch but one thread, no matter which. The thoughtful eye may trace to distant lands its firm, continuing strand, yet lose its filaments as they reach out, but find at last it coming back to him from whom it led. We move as in a fog, aware of self, but only dimly conscious of the rest as they are close to us in sight or feeling. New objects loom up for a time, fade in and out. Then sometimes, as we look on unawares, the fog lifts and there's the web in shimmering beauty, reaching past all horizons. We catch our breath, stretch out our eager hands, and then in comes the fog again, and we go on, feeling a little foolish, doubting what we had seen. The hands were right. The web is real. Our folly is that we so soon forget. What an eloquent picture of humanity as the permanent in our lives, but it's still a belief. And basically, we get to choose our beliefs. That's what makes this so hard. It would be nice if I could just stand up here and say to you, X, Y, and Z are the things of permanence in our lives. But you know I can't do that. I'm probably crossing the line by even saying that choosing to believe in something is a way of creating permanence in our lives. Even that may be too dogmatic. But it's what I have to offer you as the first thing that I see might create permanence in our lives. Maybe for you, that basic belief that you build your life on is science or nature. Maybe this is what you hang on to in an effort to create some sense of permanence in a transient life. Even though the content of those beliefs you choose may change as the world changes and we gain more experience through living, knowing that there is permanence in the fact of believing in anything still gives us something to hang on to. Robert Frost said, "So when at times the mob is swayed to carry praise or blame too far, we may choose something like a star to stay our minds on and be stayed." I think the message is the same one I've been talking about. We can create a sense of permanence in our lives by choosing something to believe in. But that isn't enough. In addition, I believe that hope is an element of permanence in our lives. It's important that we maintain it, even when the going is rough. Perhaps most important, when the going is rough. That, after all, is the hardest time to feel hopeful. When I feel most unable to be hopeful, I remember Emily Dickinson, who said, "Hope is the thing with feathers that perches in the soul and sings the tune without the words and never stops at all." If she's right, hope is always available to us. It never stops. It is a thing of permanence. And I'm absolutely convinced that it is one of the most important tools that will help to bring us through the tough times. That it can be the lighthouse beacon that stays us on our course, even when a president is assassinated, someone deliberately crashes planes into buildings full of people going about their daily lives, a child we know is kidnapped and murdered, or a loved one is diagnosed with a devastating disease. In those times, when everything in life seems transient, perhaps it is hope that can pull us through. I've known people facing terrible odds, coping with unmitigated disaster, and seemingly with no place to turn, who are nevertheless full of hope. They face life's inconsistencies, life's turmoil, and all the seeming inequities of life with a calmness that can only come from having found the permanent in the midst of the transient. But my favorite of all the things I have decided create permanence in life is love. It is my favorite because I think it does the most to keep me steadfast, to create a life with some consistencies, and to make the world I live in easier to live in. And it's absolutely in my power to live with love as the consistent, permanent element in my life. All I have to do is to decide that that's the principle from which I'm going to make decisions about how to be in the world. Yes, some people are easier to love than others, but I can do the work of loving the difficult ones. It's a life decision. It's a way of being. I turn again to Robert Weston, who said, "This day, setting aside all that divides me from others, this day, remembering that the world is beautiful to him who is willing that it be so, and that into the open, eager heart, the beauty enters in if love be there." I can choose that. I can choose to make love be the permanent in my life, and I can choose to have an open, eager heart, one that is filled with love. And if I choose that, it becomes the permanent in a transient world. In the days following 9/11, there were myriad stories of people about who, in the midst of disaster, tragedy, and all the incredible ugliness that was part of the aftermath, they acted out of love. In spite of the hatred that engendered the attack, they responded by reaching out to the world with love. Even those of us who were not directly or personally affected by the tragedy grieved along with those who lost loved ones. That must come out of a love that transcends tragedy, distance, and the fact that those who were directly affected were strangers. We have other examples of tragedy, for instance, from natural disaster. Think Katrina, or Japan, or Joplin. We experience more personal tragedies, too. Think about the shooting at the Knoxville UU Church. And when they happen, we reach out with love. So as I wrote this sermon, two things came up to surprise me. I had a sense of what I wanted to talk about as permanent in our lives before I started writing. But it was only after I began that I realized what I had chosen. Belief, hope, love, faith, hope, charity. It wasn't on purpose. And it wasn't an attempt to sneak in a religious message. In fact, I believe that I've done a good job of relating each of these elements in a very secular fashion. But as I wrote, I realized that those elements I had chosen were also ones that several of the world's religions agree upon. At first, that made me uncomfortable. I didn't want to be borrowing someone else's formula. And then I remembered that one of the great joys of interfaith work comes when we realize that underneath all our theological differences, beyond all our discrete rituals and practices, there are some underlying beliefs that we share that cross all the boundaries and barriers between us and allow us to come together. Faith, hope, and love are three of the elements that many religions share a belief in. I decided it's okay for me to believe in them too. And the second thing that I discovered as I was writing is that everything I personally define as permanent, and I recognize you may want to choose different things, is something that we can choose to have as part of life. I'm not certain, but I think that what I'm saying is that there isn't any one element that is an absolute as permanent. Only our ability to choose for ourselves those elements which we would have create a sense of permanence in our lives. For me, that's a very hopeful part of this message. We can control it. We can create permanence in the midst of all that is transient. Thank you.